This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
It is a Friday, which means time for Best Bets with our guy, Beltway Ben Hall. We'll probably talk some hoops as well because the basketball has been great. So let's start in the NBA, Beltway Ben, and what are you looking at?
He'll start here with Steph Curry over 25.5 points. He's been great in closeout games throughout his career, averaging close to 30 points in those games. There's a lot of talk about his thumb and the Rockets targeting it, but he's different. I don't think it's affecting him as much as some people might think. If Game 5 stayed close, I think he goes over that number. They're going to need him to turn it on a little bit more scoring. Last thing they want to do is head to Houston for Game 7, so I like Curry over 25.5 points.
Wow. Staying with the Golden State Warriors, what else are you looking at?
Jimmy Butler over 33.5 points, rebounds, and assists. I don't like playing multiple guys from the same teams with scoring props, but we've seen him and Steph Curry tear it up scoring together, and we're also getting his rebounds and assists here. Jimmy's a few games off the injury now. Think it has to be a good showing for him as well, like Steph Curry. If you look around their team, those two guys have got to give them a lot scoring. Draymond's going to do the dirty work, but he's not going to give them anything scoring. I think we're going to see something similar to Game 1. And he's over this in 3 of 5 of his playoff games, including the play-in. He also went over this against the Clippers, which was the final regular season game of the year that was like a play-in game. And he's just one of those guys that always shows up in the big moments. So I like Jimmy Butler over 33.5 points, rebounds, and assists.
What props do you like on the Rockets side? And also, do you think the Warriors close it out tonight?
I do think the Warriors close it out. I'm staying away from the spread, but I think they finish it at home. But I do like Fred VanVleet over 15.5 points at minus 106. First two games of the playoffs, it was not a good showing from him, but he did have a ton of looks. He just couldn't make it. He's cleared this in 3 straight games since and has looked great shooting the ball. Jalen Green is just not giving them what they've expected, and they don't have any premier scorer, really, when Jalen Green's not doing what they need him to. So I think Fred VanVleet stays on fire and goes over 15.5.
Before we get some of your thoughts, other thoughts on the playoffs, you do have one baseball prop, correct?
I do. Adley Rutschman over 1.5 hits, runs, and RBIs at minus 130. 3-for-12 against Waka with multiple extra base hits and a home run. He's been one of the unluckiest hitters in the MLB. He's looking good at the plate, sitting in the 3 spot, as you guys always talk about. So I do think Rutschman will go over this today. I think they're going to get after Waka. I'd also play the Orioles team total over 4.5 runs.
So let's look back to last night. And man, the Pistons are probably going to be kicking themselves all offseason because they kind of yacked away 3 games, including last night. And I give Jalen Brunson all the credit in the world for hitting that shot. But what, they finished the game in an 11-1 run?
It's disappointing. And I'm a fan of Cade Cunningham's. I think he's a tough player and he's going to be one of the best in the NBA. But it was pretty clear down the stretch they needed him to take that game over. They needed somebody, a star, to be unstoppable, similar to what Jalen Brunson was. And he's just was not that. He's not a great 3-point shooter. We saw that regular season he was solid, but in the playoffs he couldn't shoot the 3 really. And going to the basket, he couldn't finish. The Knicks are They're a different team. I do think they can give the Celtics some issues because I think the Celtics are a little bit fraudulent this year too. Nobody agrees with that, but we'll see. The Pistons need Cade to be that superstar that they had all regular season, and he wasn't that down the stretch in a number of games.
Well, one last thing on the Pistons, because they're going to get Ivy back, and I assume they're going to spend some money this offseason. Like, are they close to being a team that can take that next step?
Oh, absolutely. When you look, I just talked about Cade. They have a guy in Jalen Duran who's still, 21, playing the center. He's solid. Malik Beasley will probably walk. One of Ken's favorites, Tobias Harris, gave them great minutes.
He gave them great minutes.
Actually had a better year than Paul George did. I did tell Ken this was coming.
Not
between
you,
him and Paul George.
He's taunting me.
I do think if they add the right super, and this is, again, not trying to take a shot at you, Ken. Like, don't go out and add the Paul George because he's the name. When it's clear he's older, he's injury prone. There is, you know, there's some guys out there that I think they can add that will complement Cade Cunningham, but not force him to have the ball out of his hands a lot.
By the way, Bone, a year ago at this time, Margie and I went to the Sixers-Knicks playoff game.
I remember.
Close
the fight
out.
Almost happened.
You know how many points Tobias Harris had in that game?
How many?
As many as you. Zero.
That would be zero. Well, Ben, let's get to another game. We will have at least one Game 7 in the first round. Clippers defended home court. And, hey, James Harden showed up, Ben.
Yeah.
He did. And I already see a lot of people taking his under for Game 7 on the road. This was kind of what I expected for most of the series. At the beginning of the series, I put a good wager on the Clippers to win it. Now I don't feel so good. Heading into Game 7, even coming off of that win, this just looks like every other game the other team is tired and dying and, like, they can't get enough. And for them, you're going to have an OKC team who's waiting to just run either of these teams out of the building, but I just don't think they have enough. Right? Kawhi Leonard and James Harden were awesome yesterday, both of them, and they're going to need that again in Game 7. But as I said with Harden, like, in Game 7s on the road in his career, he has not showed up. They're going to need him to be good scoring, but they're also going to need guys to knock shots down. Harden throws guys open all the time, and dudes are missing threes. I think Batum will give them good minutes, but I hope they win. As I said, I have the futures bet on them, but I just, the way that this series has gone, I have a feeling the Nuggets are going to get it done.
So you are saying you think the Celtics are a little overrated, and that's fair. But who's beating? Do you buy the Cleveland Cavaliers? Because I don't think anybody else in the East is beating them.
I think that would be. I think the Knicks can get it to 6 or 7 if they're on. But again, like, they also, you can also make the argument the Pistons had two games in their hands that they gave away.
Yes.
So it depends what Knicks team shows up. But I think if you go personnel, the Knicks can match up. It just, like, Cat fouls himself out of games repeatedly, and he did it with Minnesota. Brunson can take games over. We've seen it. They're going to need Bridges knocking down shots. OG's a confident shooter, but it's off and on. But they play good defense, and then Josh Hart is the workhorse. I think they can give them a little bit of a run for their money. Last night, talking to a friend, I think that game, that series can go 6 or 7. I think Boston takes it, but I do think Cleveland will beat Boston. Drew Holiday, it depends on Drew Holiday's health. Like, last year, we saw Jaylen Brown win the MVP, and he was the difference maker. But Drew Holiday changed games for them, guarding the best player on the other team, giving them good minutes at the point guard. And when you play with a guy like Tatum and or two guys like Tatum and Brown, you're not bringing the ball up the court every possession as the point guard. But he did give them good minutes in that one role. And he's questionable. And then Jaylen Brown, he's playing through an injury. It's pretty clear that the knee is bothering him. So, I don't know. I'm just really not buying them right now. And every single person I talk to immediately shoots me down when I say it. So, we'll see. But I think the Celtics are going to get upset, whether that be this series. I think they win, but I think they could get upset by the Knicks. And if not, then the next series by the Cavs.
And we should definitely end with this. We know Greg Popovich has been dealing with some health issues and most recently suffered a mild stroke in November, where Mitch Johnson had to take over as an interim basis as their head coach. Now he's officially their head coach. The Spurs announced that Pop is transitioning to a full-time role as the team's president of basketball operations.
It's unfortunate. It really sucks to see that for Pop. And
Not Rushmore of greatest coaches of all time?
Absolutely. 1,000%. And it's also unfortunate.
So,
like,
damn consistent.
You saw this comment, like, when he was at the restaurant, and the TMZ, of course, reports it that, you know, he had another incident. You had a good feeling this was probably coming. And it sucks because seeing him with Wemby as a contender would have been so exciting. And they're going to add something big this offseason. They already added De'Aaron Fox, but they're going to add something else. And it's still
there's
good.
Giannis buzz.
That would be terrifying, but we'll see. But I do think that Pop still being around as the team president will be exciting. He knows basketball more than most people alive right now, so it's just unfortunate.
By the way, Ben, let the people know where they can find you.
At BH Journalist on Twitter, we have one of Ken's favorite things, the stream.
Oh, man.
We do them every week. We will be live Saturday, not Sunday, but we will be live Saturday talking NBA playoffs and some MLB.
BH Journalist is where you can find at BH Journalist on Twitter. Thank you, Beltway Ben. When we come back, we get to some Ravens talk. By the way, we're going to hear from Eric DeCosta coming up at 3:30. He was on the Ravens.com podcast, The Lounge. Had a lot of things to say post-draft. We'll hear from him. But coming up next, this Ravens draft class is getting a lot of rave reviews. But is it possible that this draft class could have the most immediate impact the draft class has had for the Ravens since 2022 when Tyler Linderbaum and Kyle Hamilton were taking the first round? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
Some people follow the rules. I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a couple of days, but happy the way that it transpired. I think we added some really interesting, good developmental players, some guys that can come in and help us right away, and some guys that, like, looking out, you know, I think we'll be looking back and saying, hey, these guys really helped our team.
So that was Eric DeCosta opening up his press conference at the end of the draft. That was Saturday evening. Long day, but a fruitful weekend for the Ravens, as, of course, they got Malachi Starks in the first round, Mike Green in the second round, and then filled in with 8 picks, Emory Jones in the third. By the way, I put it in the group chat. Did you see Tony Boselli loved Emory Jones? And then I heard a story that the Eagles were really high on Emory Jones to the point they were trying to trade ahead of the Ravens to get him, but the Ravens still got him. In the Eagles' offensive line, that guy, that coach knows his O-line. But a lot of depth in the back end of this draft. We talked to Chad Reiter yesterday. He's like, Garrett Dellinger's a stud. And I come to find out, you know, they did that draft, that post-draft thing with the scouts. And I guess one of the scouts was like, I think Garrett Dellinger is going to be a starter in this league one day. So is it possible, and that one happened immediately, but is it possible that this draft will have a more immediate impact than any draft since 2022, which was the Hamilton-Linderbaum draft?
I think it's very likely at this point, Ken. And I'm pretty optimistic on this group. I get it. They haven't even had rookie minicamp, which takes place this weekend. But in terms of immediate impact, go back to 2023. You got Zay Flowers, who obviously made an immediate impact.
Yes.
Trenton Simpson, who didn't play at all as a rookie, played last year. Tavius Robinson was a rotation piece. Caillou Blue Kelly was cut. Big A was cut. Voorhees was a redshirt year for him. And then last year's class, Nate Wiggins and Roger Rosengarten, by the end of the season, were both starters. And then beyond that, Adiza Isaac, he got hurt. It was a redshirt year. Tez Walker didn't play a ton. TJ Tampa got hurt. Ali, Devin Leary. So you look at how this 11-pick class lines up. Malachi Starks, you fully expect him to be a day one starter. Mike Green, maybe not a starter with OA and Kyle Van Noy, but he's going to have a legitimate role. We expect them and hope that they will sign a veteran swing guy, a six man, if you will. But right now, as the depth chart sets up, that's Emory Jones.
Yes.
He's the six man. Teddy Buchanan, who joined us yesterday. We'll see if they end up bringing in a veteran inside linebacker. But this is someone that is going to carve out a role on special teams. But right now, he has the opportunity to play some snaps for them.
Yeah, you got the punt returner, too.
No, I didn't even – keep going down the list. Tyler Loop, we expect him to be the kicker. We don't think that Justin Tucker is going to be here come training camp, but we'll see. LaJonte Wester, you mentioned, as a returner, and Aeneas Peebles. Right now, there's not many bodies at defensive line. He's someone that you hope can give you some pass rush juice. I know he's a six-round pick, but as things currently stand – he's going to be in the defensive rotation. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys that will have a role right now as it's projected, long way away until week one. But that's a lot of expectations for this rookie class.
Yeah, assuming health, you're going to see guys get on the field like you haven't seen before.
And no.
It's an impressive haul for ADC, and we're going to hear from him coming up in a few minutes as he was on their Ravens.com podcast, The Lounge, and talked about a bunch of these guys. But, yeah, and I do want to bring up again, like I talked to you about this off the air, like if Malachi Starks is the player they expect him to be, it's almost like a three-for-one because – it allows Kyle Hamilton to be the guy he was 2 years ago when he was a first-team All-Pro and as good a defensive player as he was in the NFL. And being close to the line of scrimmage, quite frankly, helps Roquan Smith, which makes him a better player. So now you've become better in so many different areas.
I think you can start to dream a little big about this defense in general, where it was horrible in the first half of last year, and then it was one of the best defenses in football in the second half. Zach Orr, his first year, I should say, under his belt as defensive coordinator. Nate Wiggins, hopefully he takes another step
like
in year
Wiggins.
Two. At bringing in Malachi Starks, like you were saying, Ardarius Washington should be a heck of a lot more confident after being a starter last year. You bring in Mike Green. Oway, he's playing for a contract, whether it's here or elsewhere, probably elsewhere. Roquan Smith, he has to be better than he was in the first half of last year. You'd think that you're going to get a very motivated Roquan Smith. I think you can dream a little on this defense.
Yeah, and it sounds like Kyle Van Noy is happy. Maybe they converted some money there, but he seems to be much more bullish on returning than he was, say, a couple months ago. So that's good news. I don't know what they're getting out of David Ajabo, quite frankly.
Does the light
go on? Does he turn into Paul Kruger in this year? And that would be wonderful. And all of a sudden, then you become really dangerous, but I'm not expecting much.
No, I think anything you get out of Ajabo is a bonus at this point. You can't go in expecting the light bulb to turn on. And I keep saying it, he's going to have to earn a spot on the 53-man roster. And it still wouldn't surprise me at all if they go out and get one of those edge rushers like a Judon, as Darius Smith, a reunion of sorts with them. And that's going to make it even tougher on Ajabo.
Yeah, you know, the more I thought about it, we did the six-pack yesterday, and I had Judon ahead as Darius Smith. The more I think about it, I think I'd probably flip-flop him now because Zadarius can help you inside as well.
Yeah.
So I think Zadarius would be the higher priority because as they sit right now, granted, they get to training camp, and let's say Ajabo looks lost again and you just cut bait, then I think you're going to get in the veteran. But right now they have a lot of bodies as edge guys.
Oh, for sure. There's no rush to go out and do anything, and I think now we are beyond that compensatory pick deadline. Any of their
May 1st,
signings,
right?
May 1st. Any of their signings moving forward doesn't affect that. So OTAs are at the end of the month, mandatory mini camps in June. So you got plenty of time before camp.
Rookie mini camp
this weekend.
This weekend.
Yeah,
we'll Media Avail
hear
Sunday.
From some of the guys. Harbs, I know, is talking.
Yeah, it should be players. I think we're going to hear from Mike Green for the first time.
You got to hear
No,
from
I
Mike
think
Green.
He'll be at the podium. I think that's like that's part of the gig. You got to talk. He did not talk on draft night or when he was drafted. So I expect him to talk.
And we're going to have boots on the ground because Beltway Ben Hall is heading out to rookie minicamp. So excited to hear what he sees.
Beltway Ben takes 695 to 795. The Beltway taking you in right
Damn
to
right.
one winning drive. Hey, coming up next. That's it. Coming up next here on the program, we mentioned Eric DaCosta. He sat in on the lounge, Ravens.com. His thoughts, now that he's had some time to let it marinate, on this draft class. We'll hear from EDC next here on The Fan.
Well, we picked, 27? And he was much higher than that. So, you know, then that happens a lot in the first round. You know, we talk about the word I use is slippage, which is just basically players outside your range that get drafted. So anytime that happens, it's great because it pushes down one of your players. And so for us, at 27, we have our list, 1 to 27. And, you know, the quarterbacks may be in there, so that means you need more than 27 because you're probably not going to draft a quarterback if you're the Ravens. So you need more than 27 players. You need 29 players if you have two first-round quarterbacks. So you got 29 players. Well, anytime a player is drafted outside your range of 29, you're like high-fiving because that's going to make it easier for one of your higher-rated guys in 29 and above. Malachi was pretty darn high.
So that was Eric DaCosta on the lounge, or in the lounge, which is the podcast Ravens.com that they do, and talking about how high Malachi Starks and, frankly, Mike Green were in their board. So two guys that had what he called a little bit of slippage, and they were able to get them in the first and second rounds, respectively.
Yeah, and we know why Mike Green fell to the spot he did at pick 59 and taking the off-the-field stuff out of it.
Yeah.
The caliber of player that you got at that point in the second round.
Top 20 pick,
I mean, it's ridiculous value. And then when it comes to Malachi Starks, it was so interesting in the lead-up, Ken, because we obviously had a bunch of draft guys on, and Emenwari and Starks, different evaluators evaluated them differently. Some, you know, Emenwari.
Lance Zierlein loved Emenwari.
Exactly. Where
Emenwari.
You didn't necessarily know where the safeties were going to fall, and obviously EDC ecstatic that Starks fell to 27.
So more from Eric DaCosta speaking in the Lounge podcast, and talks about Starks' best-rated safety in the class, in their opinion.
It comes down to, like, would you rather take the sixth best offensive lineman in a draft because you have a need on the offensive line, or the best safety? If you got the best guy at his position in the draft and he's going to come in and play for you right away, you think he's a difference maker, that's exciting.
So he's right, but there are some occasions where the sixth best O-lineman might be higher rated than the top safety, but I hear what he's saying here.
And it also, you've been hearing best player available since 1996 when it comes to the Ravens. But when you factor in need as well, you're going to lean more into the need at the safety position, where it would have been a much different ball game if Ronnie Stanley didn't re-sign here, and maybe they end up going O-line at that point.
Eric DaCosta speaking in the Lounge. What about Mike Green?
We sent in multiple area scouts. We got information from Virginia. We got information from Marshall. We talked to people in his hometown. I mean, we basically did as much as we could. And in the end, we made the decision to pick him. And we're excited about him as a player. We think he's going to flourish here with us. We think we have a great scheme for him to be his very best. And we think he's going to have a great career with us.
You know, what's interesting is, like, I think the assumption made by some is with Mike Green on their board and taking him in the second round, that the Ravens have now said, we're open for business with anybody with character concerns. I talked to somebody in the know recently who told me a specific player that was off their board. So it just tells you that they were made comfortable by this pick, but there were some guys that they couldn't get comfortable with.
For sure. And we haven't seen the Ravens taking a chance on a player that has been accused, not charged, not any of that, accused of sexual assault like Mike Green was in, I don't even know how many years, at least since Ray Rice, this has not happened, where they've been more apt to, if guys are on their roster and they have some off-the-field issues, maybe they stand by their guy. But this is a different line here. And I'm sure Eric is telling the truth there. This isn't something that they took for granted. Okay, they did their due diligence in investigating Mike Green. Now, that being said, the other side of the coin is Ian Rappaport immediately following the pick saying that there were several teams that didn't have Mike Green on their board, and there were several teams that didn't like Mike Green's explanation of what had happened in high school and college during the interview process. So the Ravens were different, and I'm sure they did a ton of work there, but still a move that was surprising for sure.
Here's what we do know from a football perspective. All you need to do is pop on the tape of the Ohio State game. And remember, Ohio State won the national championship. He was making splash plays left and right versus Ohio State.
He led the nation in sacks. He led the nation in tackles for loss with 23. And also something that you're just focusing on the sacks. You're focused on the pass rusher. This is someone that can set the edge as well. So he comes in pretty refined. And, oh, I'm sure Chuck Smith is all about getting ready to work with Mike Green.
He did tweet out, I think, firework emojis right after the pick was announced. More from Eric DaCosta. What is the state of the pass rush room with Green now around?
Well, we're blessed. I mean, you know, I think, you know, there are some people that might say, well, the Ravens don't have a true number one pass rusher. And yet, I think we finished second last year in the league in sacks. And our whole room is back. You look at Kyle Van Noy and what he's done in two seasons. A great player. Plays like a Raven. tough, smart, polished, rushes the passer, can do all the different things. He's a leader. Odafe, double-digit sacks last year, just continues to grow every single year, having a great offseason. Expect huge things from him. Tavius is another guy. Like, Tavius was a fourth-round pick, and he's like a real physical. He's a Raven. I mean, the way that guy plays, he fits us. You know, Ajabo has overcome injuries. Still a very, very talented player. He's so hungry right now. I expect big things from him. You know, it's right there for him. And then Adisa last year. So Adisa comes in. He's one of our higher players that we rated in the third round. We get him last year. Had some soft tissue things. Had some injuries. Kind of had his first season derailed a little bit by that. But again, like Adisa, when you think about that, it's like getting an additional draft pick this year. And then you take Mike Green, you put him in the mix. We got six really good, intriguing football players at Sam and Rush linebacker.
To his point, that's why I kind of told you I would probably redo my six-pack, because they have so many bodies, assuming that, like, if Ajabo shows up at training camp and he stinks and they decide they're not going to go to the season with him, then maybe that changes. But Adisa Isaac and Ajabo, you've got six bodies.
Yeah, and I totally get what Eric DaCosta's saying. And we've talked pass rush, pass rush, pass rush for years and years and years. And they led the league in sacks in 2023. And what, they were second last year in sacks in 24. But he did address the fact that even with Owe and Kyle Van Noy both coming off double-digit sacks, very good years, they don't have that dude, though. They don't have that guy that keeps defense opposing offensive coordinators up at night that is going to wreck a game. And while the sacks were high last year, the pressure rate and other pass rush win rate metrics, there were definitely several times throughout the year where you think, where the heck is pass rush? But that being said, that there is good depth there. There's no denying that.
More from Eric DaCosta. Their third-round pick was Emory Jones. We saw a piece in The Athletic talking about how Tony Boselli, Hall of Fame offensive lineman, had a man crush on Emory Jones going into this draft. The Jacksonville Jaguars wanted him, but the Ravens got him, and EDC talks about where he might fit.
I mean, I think it remains to be seen.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got good length, arm length. He's physical. He's got good feet. His game, you know, certainly I would say, like most of our picks, needs some refinement. Like, watching Emory at the Senior Bowl and watching his physicality, that to me tells you that he's going to be an excellent NFL offensive lineman. Whether it's right tackle, left tackle, guard, doesn't really matter. He's got the strength, the competitiveness, the quickness, the feet, the body, the frame, the experience, all those things to be a starting offensive lineman. And, like, honestly, when you watch him finish plays, that's a separator for me. When you really look at his competitiveness and his physicality and his ability to finish, that puts him, for me, in the top 25%.
So he's a guy that he could be a starter, he could back up at guard or tackle.
Yeah, I was banging that drum a lot heading into the draft, where I wanted them to take an offensive lineman in the first 2 days of the draft. And you like the Ravens starting offensive line. Absolutely. Bringing back Ronnie Stanley, that was huge, and all of those guys. But you need more depth beyond there, especially with Patrick McCary departing this offseason. I'm not saying that Emory Jones is going to step right in and beat Patrick McCary, because those guys don't grow on trees. But the fact that he has experience playing right tackle, they've had talks about him playing guard, there's value in that.
Let's hear one more from EDC on Ravens.com, The Lounge. And cut 14, Beltway Ben. LeJonte Wessler, a punt returner, where's he fit in?
I think Wester is a guy that, you know, what stands out about him is really his returnability. If you watch him, I think he's a twitchy, explosive punt returner. I think, you know, last year it became evident that we could probably get better there at that position. I feel like last year is probably, I didn't do a good enough job making sure that we had a good punt returner on the team. We had some guys, but we couldn't get the right mix, the right guy to really do it. And we think Wester has a chance to really come in here and be an impact punt returner for us. So excited about him.
They had a bunch of guys. They all stunk. Now they got LeJonte Wester, who, by the way, and I don't think he's going to play much in games at wide receiver, but caught a ton of balls in his college career.
Yeah, I definitely an interesting pick there, and they desperately needed a returner because last year there were so many instances of guys fielding a ball when they shouldn't have, didn't field a ball when they should have, and it costed them so much field position, and they rarely got explosive plays out of the returners either.
Coming up next here on the program, by the way, Inside Access, Jason out today. He'll be back on Monday. Orioles and Royals start a three-game set live across the street at Royal Park Cannon Yards. We're at Pickles. We'll get back into the baseball in a little bit. But coming up next, it's time for Northern Exposure. And with the draft in the books, has anyone closed the gap on the Ravens for the division crown in the AFC North? We discuss next here on The Fan. So the draft is in the books, but let's take a look back at what the AFC North did other than the Ravens. And the Steelers got Derek Harmon the first round. I love Derek Harmon. The Ravens probably would have looked at him if he was sitting there at 27. Caleb Johnson, running back, replaces Najee Harris. I love the Jack Sawyer pick. I was like kind of hoping the Ravens would take a day three pick and use it on Jack Sawyer. They got Yaya Black, defensive tackle out of Iowa. So that's what they did. Cleveland, they were all over the place, traded down from 2 to get Mason Graham, got a 1 for next year. We love Carson Schwetzinger, the linebacker out of UCLA, got a couple of running backs, got Shedeur Sanders. And then Cincinnati got a tweaked out Shamar Stewart. The stats aren't there, but the metrics are, though. I do remember a guy in Adafi Owe who the metrics were there and he didn't get sacked. I don't know, but alas, has anybody closed the gap on the Ravens, assuming health?
Well, let's just go team by team, and let's start with the Steelers since you listed their draft. And, yeah, we're all high on Derek Harmon, and it was a move that they needed to make because Cameron Hayward, coming off a good year, but how much longer does he have at this point? He's 35. They needed to inject some youth along their defensive front, and that defense was brutal for them towards the end of the year. When they ended the season on a 5-game losing streak, I think Derrick Henry's still running wild at M&T Bank Stadium.
Stiff-arming Patrick Queen.
Stiff-arming Patrick Queen. So they lost a decent bit in terms of free agents this offseason. Lost some offensive linemen. Dante Jackson, one of their starting corners, they replaced him with Darius Slay, but Ken, they still don't have a quarterback. And now it seems like it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. It seemed like it would be Aaron Rodgers for forever. And
still seems like it's Aaron Rodgers.
I still feel like that would be a train wreck if Aaron Rodgers goes to Pittsburgh. You brought in DK Metcalf. That was their second-round pick this year because they didn't have a second-round pick with that trade. I know they're cockroaches, but I am not high on this Pittsburgh team. I'm not.
I just expect them to win 8 or 9 games and then battle for a playoff spot. But they're not making any noise in the playoffs. I don't see it.
They haven't won a playoff game since 2016.
Let's go to the other team that doesn't have a quarterback, but they do have a lot of quarterbacks. They have Joe Flacco. They have Kenny Pickett. They have Dylan Gabriel. They have Shedeur Sanders, and they still have Deshaun Watson. But the Cleveland Browns, what do you think of them? Have they closed the gap?
I don't think they've closed the gap. Look, them trading down from 2 with Jacksonville, where Jacksonville, of course, took Travis Hunter, they got a first-round pick next year.
Yes.
And they're banking on the fact that, okay, hopefully Jacksonville stinks again. You can have 2 high first-round picks. They ended up selecting Mason Graham with the 5th overall pick. That, to me, Ken, shows that they're not really all in this year. They're looking towards the future. They're adding draft capital, which I understand the move. I don't necessarily hate that move, but they're not going to be in the mix this year, man.
No, I do wonder, like Harmon to the Steelers and Graham to the Browns, teams are sick of Derrick Henry running all over them.
Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Guys that try to get after the quarterback, try to stop the run, guys along the defensive line, absolutely.
So then let's get to the team that was the second best. Steelers technically second best. Cincinnati has a great offense. Their defense stunk a year ago. They did draft to Shamar Stewart, defensive end out of Texas A&M, and they brought back the entire offense. And paid them.
Yes, they did. The offense is going to be really good again. As long as Joe Burrow and Chase and Higgins, they stay healthy. They're going. And even Chase Brown was solid for them last year as well. Gesicki's back. The offense is going to be good, but has their defense gotten markedly better? I don't think so. And you're hoping that Shamar Stewart, the sacks that he didn't get in college, he was just saving up for the NFL level, Ken. Another key for Cincinnati, and we'll have a long time to get into this, they got to start the season fast. The issue with them is
not losing New England at home week one.
They keep digging themselves into massive holes in the month of September. They need to find a way to go 500 in the first month of the season. That way they're not just fighting from behind all the time. But saying all of this, the Ravens, they haven't necessarily added a ton in terms of you bring in DeAndre Hopkins, Shadobi Awuzie during free agency and the draft, which we just talked about. But I just think that these other teams have gotten worse.
Well, the Ravens, I think, had the best roster in the division. And yes. They plugged some holes that yes. we knew they needed plugging, and I think they've gotten better in those places.
Yes.
So, if anything, on paper, I feel like they're as good or better than they were than they were before the draft.
Without question. And who would you say is the second best? Cincinnati, I guess?
I think Cincinnati.
I would say Cincinnati.
If they stop blowing games, they should win.
But I still feel like that gap from the Ravens to Cincinnati is a decent size.
Yeah, I think the Ravens assume, again, Lamar Jackson gets hurt. But assuming they're healthy, they're overwhelming favorites to win this division.
Absolutely.
Coming up next, we'll continue talking the draft. What did Eric Edholm from NFL.com think of the Ravens draft? What do you think of the draft overall? We will ask him next here on The Fan.